When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is Metal Mike, and in this episode we catch up with Pretty Boy Floyd guitarist Christy Majors. We revisit the classic Leather Boys with Electric Toys album over 30 years later, and we get some details on the new Pretty Boy Floyd album that's on the way. It's a fun one. Check it out. Well, Christy, welcome to the 80s Glam Metal Cast. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing good, man. Thanks.
Hey, you know, I've been trying to catch up with you for a long time. Glad to finally have you on.
Yeah, you know, I tend to usually avoid interviews, but good to be on though.
Well, this is, I mean, 80s Glam Metal Cast, this is where you belong, right?
this is where I belong? Okay. If you say so, okay. It's all good.
Well, hey, it sounds like Pretty Boy Floyd's got some activity on the way. There's a lot of shows coming up, and there sounds like there might even be new music on the way. What can you give us?
Okay, well, yeah, there's some shows coming up, obviously. If anybody follows our, you know, social media pages and stuff, they could see the shows coming up. Unfortunately, COVID is putting a little damper into some of these shows and sure. Festivals and stuff that we want to do, especially the overseas ones. So we had to cancel, like, Australia, and we keep on pushing stuff back. But we'll see what happens. Let's see, yeah, we have I finished the new Pretty Boy Floyd record. It's been done.
Okay.
And then COVID, you know, came around, and he was supposed to, you know, come and finish the vocals on it, you know, or just start the vocals. And, yeah, so COVID came around, and we just thought we would, you know, wait. We thought it was going to be, you know, something that was going to pass quickly, and but obviously it's not. So we've been talking about it, that hopefully we can finish it maybe this year and get it out next year over on Frontiers.
Nice. So. For the direction, I mean, I'm assuming it's, you know, Pretty Boy Floyd type vibe, similar to the last album you did, or how is it different?
It's a little more heavier.
Okay, cool. Nice.
Yeah. So a little more heavier, you know, still got the same Pretty Boy Floyd sound and hooks and stuff, just a little bit more, raw in your face and, you know, a little bit more kicking.
Nice. Well, man, I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to get it done because it's probably going to be the last Pretty Boy Floyd record that we ever do. So I'm looking forward to get it done because it's been sitting on my hard drive for a couple of years now.
Hey, man, you never know. There could be another one, right?
There could be another one. I don't know, man. It's hard. It's kind of hard for me to write those lyrics, you know, the Pretty Boy Floyd style lyrics, you know.
Right.
You know. Easier to do when you were like 20 years old, but when you're 50 and you're writing about, you know, stuff like that, it's kind of hard, you know.
It's funny, you know.
Which is why I do solo music.
Right.
So that's my outlet for, like, my solo music.
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, just going back to, like, the Leather Boys with Electric Toys album, you know, there, you know, I Want to Be With You, you know, I was walking out of class the other day, you know what I mean? Like, it's been a while since any of us have been in class, right?
Dude, okay, so come on, man. Look, when we wrote those songs, when those songs came out, when we put those songs together, I didn't think that I'd be 50 fucking years old singing, you know, walking out of class the other day, or your mama won't know. only the young understand. It's kind of ridiculous, actually, to fucking do those songs now, dude, everybody in the audience is old. How can we be singing Only the Young Understand? Nobody's young here anymore.
Well, hey, at least you don't have a song called She's Only 17.
<That's true. laughs> Especially when you're singing it when you're 55 years old.
She's Only 17, maybe, is what it's going to be coming up, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's a little creepy. I feel a little silly singing those songs. But you know what? You know, if Kiss can still do it, then we can still do it, right?
So exactly. Exactly. Now, some shows you don't play at, and some of the more recent ones, do you have business that kind of keeps you away from the band sometimes?
Okay, so, you know, I went through some, like, I don't know, I guess like the past, like, 2.5 years. Went through some, like, personal health issues.
Okay.
That forced me to take some time off. You know, now that everything is better and everything is, good, I am, I'm ready to go out there and start playing shows again. So
awesome.
I mean, that's the real reason. I didn't announce it formally. You know, I've kind of beaten around the bush about it to some people, but you know, hey, look, it's my business. It's nobody else's business.
Sure.
But I understand people want to know if I'm going to be there because I mean, it's only me and Steve left in Pretty Boy Floyd, really. So
right.
But yeah, I mean that was the reason why that was the reason why I kind of took like 2.5 years off. So
okay, well I'm glad to hear that you're doing better. That's great.
Yeah, no, I'm good and I'm ready to go. And I didn't pick up my guitar for the longest time. I just picked it up, you know, a couple weeks ago and started learning the songs all over again. I'm like, okay, well you don't really forget them, so
no.
That's cool.
Yeah, I think that stuff comes back quick.
Yeah, especially when you've been playing for 30 years.
Speaking of 30 years, over 30 years ago, Leather Boys with Electric Toys. I mean, does it seem possible that this album is over 30 years old at this point?
It's freaking crazy, right? You know, it's like, God, time flies so fast.
It does.
Yeah, it's so crazy. Yeah, I think, I don't remember what, I think it might have came out, what, like September, October, or something like that, of 89?
Yeah,
I remember.
I know I bought it when it came out, but yeah, I can't remember. I just remember buying it in 89. I don't remember the month.
Yeah, I know it was more towards the the latter part of the year because I remember when we were talking to the label about like getting ads at radio stations, and we were having a hard time because program directors were going on vacation and stuff and everything like that. You know, it was kind of crazy. But yeah, it's crazy that that album is so old.
I would go out on a limb and say that it's possibly bigger today than it was back then. Would you agree with that?
You know, it's so hard for me to, you know, evaluate something like this because it's like, I see it when I go overseas because there's a whole new young generation that come to the shows.
Mm-hmm.
In the U.S., maybe not as much, you know, but I think it's like a cult classic. I think, you know, like a bad B movie that like when it comes on TV, you don't want, you know, you don't want to turn it off. You kind of want to watch it, you know. That's the way I look at the record, you know.
Right. I mean, me personally, obviously, I love this kind of stuff, so I put it up there with some of the greatest, you know, glam metal '80s releases ever. I'm in a Twitter community, you know, with a lot of people that love this stuff. But man, if I tweet Pretty Boy Floyd or a lot of other people do as well, you see a lot of people jumping on, awesome album, incredible album. You know, every song is great. People just love this album.
Yeah, we were kind of like this underground kind of like underdog type of band because we kind of came out like, you know, during the tail end of like that whole music scene, you know, and so we were like that last wave, you know, to kind of hit, you know, but the record has like a unique sound, catchy songs, you know. In fact I was talking to Howard Benson not too long ago, who produced the record, and he said to me something like, he's like, I can't believe I mixed that record, you know. And Howard Benson has gone on to do some crazy records, you know, huge, humongous, successful records, you know, like everything from like POD to Hoobastank to I mean, he's sold millions and millions. Rascal Flatts. I can't even name all the bands he's produced. But we were like the second like rock band that he produced. He had produced he had just got done doing the Bang Tango record, the first Bang Tango record.
Yep.
And so, and then we were the second record that he did. But he, so he was saying, he was like, I can't believe I mixed that record. He's like, you know, and then he admitted something to me. He goes, you know what? He goes, for the longest time, I used to keep that off my resume.
That's not good.
I was like, thank you, Howard. And he goes, I just didn't feel like it was one of my finest pieces of work. So I go, and he goes, but I put it back on now because I realize now that the record, like, it fit with that time, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it had a unique sound. Had it, like, sounded, you know, like all the other bands that were coming out at that time, it probably would have got lost in the shuffle, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's funny. I've got this written down because I talked with Howard Benson, I don't know, maybe 6-8 months ago, and obviously we talked about this album, and he was raving about it. You know, he's raving about you. He goes, you know, your guitar playing was amazing. The songs were amazing, and he was raving about it, man. And he actually told me a story. I don't know if he ever told you this or if you've heard this, but he must have, I don't know if he bumped into Nikki Sixx in recent years, and they got talking about Toast to the Town, and Nikki was like, oh, you guys did a great version of that on, you know, the Pretty Boy Floyd album. So I was like, wow, that's pretty cool that Nikki Sixx, you know, thought it was pretty cool.
Oh, really? Oh, that was cool.
Yeah.
No, I never, I ran into Nikki Sixx a few times. I never asked him mm-hmm. what he thought of the thing. I'm not going to say, hey, what did you think of our version of Toast of the Town, man? You know? So I'm not going to say that to him, but, you know, so this is a couple of years ago that I was talking to Howard. So you recently did an interview with Howard? Yeah, it was a couple of years ago that I was talking to Howard, and, you know, then that's when Howard said, you know what? He goes, but you know what? The record was, you know, it was a good record. It was a good mm-hmm. record at the time. I put it back on my resume, you know?
Yep.
And, me and Howard, me and him had a vision for the record. Didn't come out exactly the way that I wanted it to,
mm-hmm.
but still, it, like I said, it was, Howard did a great job, and I like and I respect Howard a lot, so he's a good guy.
Now, if you look back, I mean, you were on MCA Records, and I've gone on, you know, rants about MCA Records with different artists before, but overall, do you think you were maybe misunderstood at this point? Because you figure in 89, 90, in that era, a lot of people had shed the makeup and the glam look. You know, like 86 was like a real big year for like glam with Poison and Cinderella, and everybody had kind of shed that look. And here you guys come out in 89 with that look back. Do you think people misunderstood what you were about, or do you think that was what you were about and it's either, you know, take it or leave it?
Well, I mean, that's, you know, this was something that we were always influenced by.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it was like something that we, that we intentionally did, you know, that we said, oh, we have to do this. I mean, I think this is what we all liked, you know, we all mm-hmm. liked, you know, the Motleys, the Alice, you know, the Kisses, you know.
Yep.
We all dug that, you know, kind of like that whole vibe and stuff and everything. And so we were just being ourselves, and you know, and then being on MCA, Al Teller, who was the president of CBS at the time, had just left there to start running MCA Records. I don't even think they knew what they were doing, because
right.
I remember when we first did the Set the Night on Fire video, you know, they were like, oh yeah, no, we need you guys, like, glam, fucking makeup, this, that, you know, fucking play the image up, fucking do this, do that. And we were like, yeah. And then when it came time to do the second video, they were like, yeah, maybe you guys shouldn't wear as much makeup.
Right.
And, you know, maybe we're going to put it in black and white. Maybe we should shoot it in black and white, so we tone down the image a little bit.
Yeah.
And let's do like all new photo shoots. Dude, they didn't even know what they were doing, you know. So we used to go into meetings, and I remember we'd be sitting at the big office table. And there'd be, you know, Al Teller, the president, Richard Palmisi, the vice president, and, like, you know, the head of radio and everything. And we'd be sitting at the other end, and they'd be like, so what do you think we should do? the record label asking a bunch of fucking 21-year-old kids, what do you think we should do?
I don't know.
I'm like, you know what? Give me a couple million dollars. I'll go put it in my bank right now. I'll be good. But, yeah, they didn't know what to do. And I think the problem was you know, that, you know, everything was so saturated at that time. Yeah. You know, there was like MTV only had so many slots to, you know, put so many bands in rotation. Radio stations only had so much, you know, so many spots to put bands in rotation. And, you know, it was hard, you know, I mean, and I think the reason why we still have like kind of like a grassroots, you know, underground kind of following is because, you know, we weren't accepting that, you know, our songs weren't like, you know, top 10 on radio or whatever, top 40 radio, whatever. And we were just like, you know, we're just going to go out there and we're going to play. We're going to go out there and we're going to play shows. We're going to tour. And we used to do a constant run from, like, you know, Seattle all the way down to Texas and back. And we would do it, like, every 3 months. And, you know, we'd find a different band to do it with. You know, we'd find, you know, another band that was like us, like Shaka Messiah. We'd be like, hey, do you want to go out and do some shows together? And they were like, fuck yeah, let's go do them, you know? I think that's why we kind of like kept our like little like underground following, you know. It wasn't because of the record label, I'll tell you that much.
No, they definitely blew a few bands and a couple. I mean, some of my all time favorites come off of MCA: Pretty Boy Floyd, Lillian Axe, and Keel. And I think all three of those bands just should have been way bigger than they were. But you know, it is what it is.
It is what it is. You know, I'm not bitter about it. I mean, you know, I had a great time. So you know, I mean. And I consider myself fortunate to even get the opportunity, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You got a favorite song on Leather Boys with Electric Toys?
Favorite song? Maybe Rock and Roll Outlaws, maybe.
That's a good one. Yeah. Yep.
It's got, like cool elements of, like, things that we stole from so many, like, other bands from, like, The Sweet and... I don't even want to say where we stole some of the stuff from, but anyway, it was I like Rock and Roll Outlaws. Rock and Roll Outlaws is always a cool kind of a song, and I always kind of figured that we were kind of like the Rock and Roll Outlaws anyway at that time, you know.
Yeah, you were. Yeah, definitely. And you know, I'm a big fan of those like real glammy poppy songs. And I always liked The Last Kiss. I love that song.
I knew you were going to say that, The Last Kiss. So funny, because when we I didn't want to record that song for the record. We had some other songs, you know. But Howard was just like, oh, we have to record that song.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, dude, that's the single. And I'm like, what? That's the single? You're out of your mind. So Howard was pushing for that to be the single. He was like, oh, The Last Kiss has got to be the single, dude. Are you kidding me? And I don't know. Anyway, we didn't really have a say in it. But but The Last Kiss, you know, look, we usually don't play that song in the set, you know. But
yeah.
Now that we're doing these 30th anniversary shows, I remember we played them for the 25th anniversary shows. We were playing that song, and I'm like, no, the song actually isn't that bad. It's actually pretty cool, you know?
If everybody goes for a pee break during that one, then you'll know that you're right, and, you know, I don't know what the hell I'm talking about.
I mean, it's definitely not a bad song. I mean, I could think of, like, I could have thought of some other songs that would have been better to fit on the record at the time, but, you know, I think, you know, some of them we put on the... I think some of the demos we put on the Porn Stars record, like Shy Diane and Restless and some of those type of songs. I can't even remember what else. And then we had like Shock the World. And I can't even remember 7 Minutes in Heaven. We had a lot of songs.
Yeah, you guys were brewing up a whole other release for like a second album. And I love all those songs. Some of the ones you've already mentioned, like Restless and Tonight Belongs to the Young. I mean, it sounds like the next, you know, album would have been amazing.
Well, what happened was, so Bret Hartman, our A&R guy that signed us at MCA, they let him go.
Mm-hmm.
And the A&R guy that was put in charge of us was like kind of like a top 40 like R&B kind of guy, and so we would give him songs, and he'd be like, "Yeah, I don't hear it. I don't hear it. I don't hear it." And you know, we were out there and we were writing with all these different writers, you know, like the Tonight Belongs to the Young and Hands Off My Radio. I mean, pretty much everything that was on that Tonight Belongs to the Young. Almost all the songs on there were written with, you know, outside writers as well, you know. And I don't know, we had amassed probably like over 100 songs, and I'm sure demos are probably all over the internet and everything. But yeah, I mean, I thought Tonight Belongs to the Young was like pretty fucking cool ass fucking song. Like, yeah. I thought, like, you know, Bon Jovi could have put that out and it probably would have been like a hit, you know, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love it.
But, you know, the A&R guy is just like, yeah, I don't hear it. He's like, you know what we need? We need something like, More Than Words, crossover. We need, you know, like acoustic ballad. So then we wrote with an outside writer. Once again, we wrote Give Me a Reason to Stay. I don't know if you know that one. It's on YouTube.
Okay. That one's not ringing a bell. I'll have to go look up that one.
It's a demo. I found it on YouTube. But I thought it was, you know, really a good song. But once again, we bring it to the A&R guy. He's just like, yeah, I don't hear it. So then finally, after him stringing us along for, I don't know, maybe a year, I kind of said, you know what? This guy is never going to let us put out the record. Mm-hmm. And we're in 91 already here, so we're talking about, you know, Nirvana, Soundgarden, Alice in Chains, you know, already starting to blow up, you know, and all, you know, the rumors of all the bands getting drops, you know, are happening already, you know. So I just told the guys, I'm like, I'm done, man. So I actually went back to school and became a paralegal. So
wow.
And I actually started working for the our attorney, who was our attorney / manager for Pretty Boy Floyd. It's funny because I used to think when he was managing us and our attorney, I used to think he was doing such a shit job, you know, because we'd go play somewhere and I would go down the street and find the record store, the nearest record store, and I would see that, you know, they would have no CDs of us in the record store. There was no advertising of the show, no nothing, no posters, no nothing. And I would get on, you know, I'd get on the payphone and I'd be like, you're fired, you motherfucker. Why are we out here? Like, people can't even go buy a fucking CD if they fucking see us fucking play. This is horseshit, blah, blah, blah. You know, and anyway, you know, fast forward a couple of years later, when I'm looking for a job, and I get my paralegal degree, and he was still doing law, and he was doing some record label stuff too as well. I said, "Hey, want to give me a job?" And he goes, "Wait! Are you asking me that you want to work for me now?" And he goes, "Oh, he's like, payback is going to be a bitch." He's like, "So now I'm going to be able to tell you to go fuck off." So anyway, he turned out to be like a really a great mentor of the music business for me, and kind of like a second father for me, and it's pretty great.
That's awesome. So they kind of kept going for a while, and I don't know if this was a good thing or bad thing, but you missed out on that image where they had the Speedos, right?
The heels and the G-strings? Yeah, that was not me. I am not in any of those pictures, and I would have never have done that. And I don't care that Bill O'Coin was managing them and Kenny Kerner, you know, the masterminds of KISS.
Yep.
I don't care if they were telling me, because at one, we all knew Bill O'Coin was gay. So, you know, I don't know. He's getting his rocks off to that kind of stuff or whatever. But yeah, no, you would have not caught me dead in high heels and fucking G-strings. No.
There's not a lot of those pictures out there, but you do see them once in a while. And it's like, wow, it's like a mix of Pretty Boy Floyd and Manowar and I don't know what else. But it's crazy looking. It is kind of crazy.
Yeah, sometimes I get tagged in it because sometimes they think that I am in the picture.
Right.
You know, maybe Ariel with like sunglasses on or something like that. You know, and they think it's me or something like that. And I'm like, nope, untagged. Thank you. That is not my ass. I do. You know what? I mean, I would sell my soul to sell, a gazillion records, but I would not parade around in fucking G-strings.
That's where we draw the line.
Draw the line somewhere.
But eventually, obviously, you reconnect with Steve, and you guys, started doing shows again. And I mean, were you just getting kind of hungry for it again after a while?
Was I getting hungry for it? I was working. So I was working for Sony Music, for the longest time.
Mm-hmm.
My actually, the attorney that I was working for started a small little record label, and Sony actually ended up buying it. So I was having a blast actually doing that, working on the other side of the music industry. But then, I wasn't really playing Pretty Boy Floyd shows. I think it was Steve, Kerry Kane, Kerry Kelly, and whoever they could find on the bass at the time,
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't really doing anything. But then Cleopatra came along, asked us to do like a re-record of the whole Leather Boys record. And I didn't want to do a whole re-record. I'm like, right. So we really need to do a whole re-record of the album? And he's like, well, it's out of print. You can't get it anymore. So, people want to hear that music. I'm like, how about we do some of the songs and we put some newer songs on there then?
Mm-hmm.
And, he agreed to that. And so, we went in and we recorded that. And, it kind of got me itching back into music a little bit. We started playing shows again and stuff. I think we put out that. And I think we put out the Alive at the Pretty Ugly Club. And then I think it was like... Right around that time, I think we were playing a show, like after that Pretty Ugly Club show or something. Not was it the Pretty Ugly Club show? I don't know. You know what happened? I think it was we Kane said he needed a break. Kerry Kane said he needed a break, and I think we had gotten Dish at that time to come and play drums or something. But then Kerry came back for a little bit, and we were playing some show. I can't remember where it was. It was some like Tarzana, California over here. And after we got off the stage, Kerry goes in the backstage room and he throws his jumpsuit against the wall. He says, I can't do this anymore.
Hmm.
He's like, that's it, I'm done. And I said, you know what? I'm done too. So I think we both departed at that time. And I think that's when Steve got that lineup for that shit album. What is that shit album called?
Is it the one that Size Does Matter? No, is that the right one?
Or? Oh, yeah. Size Does Matter with the stupidest title in the world, too. Anyway.
I don't know if I've ever listened to much of that one. Am I better off that way or what?
It's not a Pretty Boy Floyd record. Right. I mean, it's Steve singing, the bass player's songs.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It has nothing to do with Pretty Boy Floyd whatsoever except Steve singing on it.
Gotcha.
It has no Pretty Boy Floyd vibe or sound or, hooky choruses. It's just, I don't know. Anyway.
So obviously you did Public Enemies in 2017. That's a, great album. It definitely has, some of the spirit of the debut. But, it's a little heavier, I think, in some spots. And it's an updated sound.
You think it has an updated sound?
I think it does.
When we were recording it, it was kind of sounding a little bit more raw sounding, But, we don't have big budgets to,
right.
I mean, 90% of that record was recorded in my studio. I have a small little studio here, that's like literally like 10 minutes away from my house,
Mm-hmm.
And, I can't record drums in there. Like I can record drums at another studio, put them on my Pro Tools rig. And then bring it back, and I could do the guitars, bass, and vocals, and everything in my studio, And it's super comfy because you know, you're not pressured for time and everything. And, you know, and I feel like I'm a pretty good ear, especially when it comes to, you know, recording Steve's vocals, to sit there and be patient while he sings like one line at a time. and he'll sing like one line. He'll sing like, you know, like, we're rock and roll outlaws. Okay, let's listen to that back. Okay, let's double that. I'm like, okay. Let's triple it. I'm like, okay. Let's four times. I'm like, okay. So, I'm pretty patient when it comes to that. So anyway, I felt like I did a good job, and then Kerry Kelly helped me out with the drums, and Chad Stewart played the drums on the record. I did the bass and the guitars, and then I was good friends with Cameron Webb, who had he'd done like all the Motorhead records. He'd done like Megadeth. He'd done like Zebrahead. I was working with Puddle of Mud at the time, and we had just started recording some of their music for their new record, and I really got along with Cameron really well. So I said, "Hey, Cameron, I don't got a fucking big budget here, but would you be interested in mixing this Pretty Boy Floyd record?" He's like, "I don't know." And, you know, and the funny thing is Cameron used to compare his records with Howard Benson, because Howard was recording a lot of the Motorhead records. Before Cameron was doing them. So I go, "You know Howard Benson recorded our first record, right?" And he's like, "He did, huh?" And I'm like, "Yeah." I go, "Do you think he could do a better job?" He's like, "You know what?" He goes, "You know, oh yeah, you know what? I will mix it.
You scammed him.
Yeah, exactly. You know, kind of tricked him into it, you know. So anyway, so he mixed it, even though we probably shouldn't have afforded him. But I think that he was thinking very slick, you know, very slick 80s kind of sound, and that's what he envisioned. And I was listening to it, and I'm like, yeah, it sounds pretty good, you know. I mean, especially for the budget that we had, I'm proud of the record. I thought it came out well.
Yeah. Now, okay, so you knew what my favorite song was on Leather Boys. Could you guess what my favorite song would be on this album?
Paint It On?
Yes! Ding, 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 ding. Yes.
The most popular song on the record.
You got it, man! I love it! So can you write some more of those kind of songs for the new album? I know you're going to do some heavy stuff, and I love heavy stuff, but I love that glammy stuff, too.
Yeah, you love that, like... that like Nick Gilder kind of like super poppy sound, you know.
Love it.
Yeah. Now, hey, look, I'm a big fan of all the Nick Gilder songs. You know, I mean, I can't even tell you how many times Backstreet Noise and all those songs were so good off of those first two Nick Gilder records. Big fan.
Yeah, I love that.
And of course, The Sweet. Come on, you know.
Yep.
I mean, Sweet had some like amazing pop songs too, but Paint It On. It's the funny thing about Pretty Boy Floyd songs is they sound so simple. Like when you listen to them, they just sound so simple. But then when you have to learn them, you're like, oh my god, there's so many parts to these fucking songs. And because I've had drummers like go, oh yeah, no problem, yeah, like Vic Fox or something like that. Mm-hmm. They'd be like, hey Vic, you want to, you know, come play some shows? Fuck yeah, yeah. And they'll come down and they'll like try to do the intro to Rock My Outlaw. He's like trying to do the drums. He's like, wait, he's like, the drums don't follow the guitar and the bass. He's like, why am I playing this wrong? I'm like, I don't know. And he's like, and then it's got this stop over here and a not this stop over there. And then it goes to this other part. He's like, oh man. I'm like, yeah, man, dude, it's not AC/DC, man. It's not just 4 and 4.
Right.
Where you can just kind of fake your way through it. But when you listen to it, it sounds like it's easy.
Yeah. No, it's...
But, you know, I dare people to, you know, pick it up and, you know, play the guitars to it or something like that, you know, because especially on this record, I put a lot of guitars on it.
Nice.
I did a lot of overdubbing, way more than what I did on the Leather Boys record, only because at the time, of the Leather Boys record. Like, I didn't put a lot of like fills and stuff like that in the Leather Boys record. I don't know. I just didn't think about it. You know, I was just like, I thought the demos that we had did sounded so good, and we were pressed for time when we made the demos. I was like, oh, so we're just going to make a better sounding demo. That's the way I thought of it. But because I was at my studio and I could sit there by myself, I could sit there and go, you know what? I'm going to layer this and layer that, put this on that, put that on that. Maybe I'm going to put some keyboards in there.
Right.
Maybe I'm going to put some little chimes in here and there and stuff like that. Maybe I'm going to put some, you know, reverse snares and, you know, just, you know, other stuff. And, you know, I mean, eventually you got to let it go. You got to say, okay. I could sit here for like 10 years and add and add and add and add. But eventually you just got to let it go and just say, okay, it's done.
Yeah, you can make yourself crazy with that kind of
stuff. Yeah. No, it's eventually like I'm super critical when I record like my solo,
right?
My solo stuff, and you know, like I'll sit there and like I'll record the whole album and it'll be done. And I'll be done with the whole vocals and everything, and I'll be like getting ready to mix it, and then like I'll listen to it and I'll be like, you know what? I could sing these songs so much better, and I just scrub them all and I go and I sing them all over again, and then I'm like, you know what? I could probably sing it even better than that. And I'll go in there and I'll start singing them all over again. And I'm just like, what am I doing? I'm a fucking idiot. Just leave it alone.
It's stuff nobody would notice but you. You know what I mean? You're the only one that would ever notice that little thing that's driving you crazy. So,
you know, because I sit there, like, I pick it apart. And I'm like, you know what? I'm like, the vocals sound just a tiny bit distorted. And like, maybe they were a little too hot. Maybe I was recording just a little too hot in the microphone. I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna turn it down just a little bit so it's not as hot. I'm gonna re-record it again, and then it still sounds the fucking same. I'm just, you know, this is the struggle of being creative.
Yeah. You wonder, is it a blessing or a curse, right?
Right. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what it is. But, you know, the problem is like, I like to keep my mind occupied. I think that's one of the reasons why maybe I might go in there and like recut guitar solos, you know, like 20 times over, or vocals or something else, you know. Because if I don't keep my mind occupied, I drive myself fucking crazy.
Nope. I totally know what you mean, man.
Yeah. I mean, too much time on your hands, mind having too much time to think.
Right.
Yeah. Go a little crazy.
Well, brother, man, I'm so glad that we got to talk about some Pretty Boy Floyd. I mean, been a big fan for a long time, and I'm really looking forward to the new music on the way. Anything you want to say to your fans out there in closing?
Well, first of all, you know, okay, so I posted a joke about, like, of some album cover with, you know, like a cartoon drawing and, like, a bunch of naked girls, and it says, like, Pretty Boy Floyd, Fuck the World or something, and I think I put it up there. I said, album coming soon, Pretty Boy Floyd, Fuck the World. Anyway, it was a joke. So some publications or online whatever publications ran with it.
Oh boy.
And said, new Pretty Boy Floyd record coming out. And I'm just like, God, can't fucking write anything as a joke anymore.
Right.
I should have put just joking. That's my fault. Anyway, so that was a joke. That's not the truth. There's actually a real Pretty Boy Floyd record coming out. I'm probably going to have a new solo record as well that's going to come out too. I've been working on a lot of songs. I've been posting like little snippets on Instagram. And so look for some new music coming out. Look for some shows. Please come out, support music. I know COVID sucks and having to wear a mask or whatever, you know, whatever you got to do. But, you know, I mean, we can use the help. And
well, that was great
there,
talking,
you know,
with Christy. Well, hey, we just hit 2,000 subs on YouTube. Thanks to all
appreciate
the subscribers.
Appreciate it, man. Well, hey,
rock
thank you
out
so much. Have a great night.
Thanks, Mike. Have a good one, man.